And I got that coffee pot down to a science.
You do?
Yeah.
I got the button on the other coffee maker down to science, too. I just push it, fills up.
Yeah.
Without any prep.
Disgusting coffee.
Actually, have you tried the new one?
I mean, it was like somebody,
the first one was terrible.
It was like somebody bragging about prison food.
Well, good morning to you. Kelly here, and we've got a special show today. We've got Walt Ruble, who was had a little car difficulty yesterday, but it worked out better because now he's in the studio for 2 hours, and I've got my mentor and occasional tormentor, Mike McKay, here, who trained me trained me on everything I know.
Yeah, right. Blame it on me. Go ahead.
But we're here to talk about the year in Las Cruces, Mesilla Valley, New Mexico, whatever. I guess throw a little bit of national, international stuff in. But anyway, good morning to you, Mike.
Good morning, Kelly.
How's it going?
Pretty good, pretty good. 2015 was a great year, wasn't it?
Fantastic, yeah. Very interesting. Walt Ruble is the editorial page editor, Las Cruces Sun News, by the way.
Yeah, a lot of editors in my title.
Yes.
2015 was a horrible year. I was just going through the list, the top 10 list, and admittedly, those are always skewed to death and destruction because, you know, that's news. But this year, I mean, the top stories statewide were Diana Duran, the Secretary of State, getting arrested and convicted, the spill into the river up by Farmington. I mean, that happened in Colorado, but it came into our river.
I was there in Durango just days after that happened.
Do you have an alibi?
I was after the fact. I was there after the fact.
Uh-huh. And that's what he told the police as
well. Yeah. The Albuquerque police shootings. I mean, there were 10 on the list, and the only positive one at all was Holly Holm beating Ronda Rousey in the UFC fight.
That was,
that was phenomenal.
Quite a coup for New Mexico.
Yeah, it was. But my point is, yeah, 9 out of the 10 were negative things.
And how did the year end for the governor?
Yeah, and that wasn't even on the list.
As a matter of fact, it was kind of interesting. I was on the internet yesterday, and there was a story. I don't know whether it was on Yahoo or one of the MSN.com or something, but it was about the stories of drunken politicians.
Right.
And it was a story about going back years, you know, Warren Harding and stuff like that.
But the picture
of the story was Governor Susana Martinez.
Yeah.
Was she holding a pizza?
Pizza? I'm sorry.
Well, we're always at the top or bottom of some list.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the thing of it is, when you look at year-end retrospectives year after year after year,
right,
it always just seems to be filled with bad news.
It is. And like I said, that's the nature of the news business. The old cliche, when the plane lands, it's not news. When it crashes, it's on the top 10 list. And so I get that. But usually there are, you know, economic success stories. There are, you know, something other than a sports story.
There you go. From an economic standpoint, there was nowhere to go. You certainly couldn't make any money by putting it in the savings account. I don't know if they don't pay anything at all. It's certainly far less than whatever the service fee they charge you. And the stock market, I think, only went up about 2%, if that.
Yeah, and here in the state, it was just a tough year. I mean, we are lagging behind the recovery in just about every measurable that there is. But, you know, the key one being jobs. I mean,
That's an interesting thing. I was just wondering why we are surrounded by relatively prosperous states.
Yes, yes.
And New Mexico remains mired where we are. Why is that?
Well, a lot of people will say it. I was talking to the guy who's the head of the institute that studies this stuff. I'm trying to remember the name, the Rio Grande Institute.
No, Paul Gessing.
Yeah. Who's very, very informative. And actually, I did an interview with him that I got to turn into a show. But he told me that part of it is that just the way that things have always been done here that we've accepted less efficiency. We've accepted more government input and more government jobs. But it's kind of sad. Mike, you got the most dynamic economy in Texas. Arizona is doing fantastic, and we're just sitting here and sucking air.
To the north, Colorado.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of them are doing much better than us. I know conservatives always point to Anthony, New Mexico, and Anthony, Texas.
They're going to say St. Anthony, but go ahead.
Every time there's a local race,
we can pray to them.
You know, the Republican candidates come in and they point to those two communities and they say, Anthony, Texas is thriving. You go there and they have all the convenience stores, all the fast foods, all the, you know, all the things you would want in a small, growing, thriving community, as opposed to Anthony, New Mexico, which is, you know, right across the street in some cases and has none of those things. And they point to, you know, taxes being the main thing, regulations. I mean, all of the things down the list. Now, I think that's a little simplistic, but I also think there's probably something to it.
Yeah. Well, there's got to be something that differentiates us because it's pretty much the same topography in Arizona as here in Texas. I mean, some desert, a little bit of mountain and stuff. So it's not like that they're killing us with natural resources, but they do have a lot of oil in Texas, but we have oil in the, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, I guess one of the things that Paul had said to me was that the regulations do matter and the taxes do matter.
No, I think that's true, but I also think just looking at New Mexico's economy, that's a little bit simplistic. We have over the years become incredibly reliant on the federal government. We have a lot, you know, we have the two national labs. We have White Sands Missile Range, obviously. We have I think, two Air Force bases, much more so than most states. And when Congress goes through these upheavals, when they pass things like sequester, which have no rhyme or reason to them other than, you know, we're going to set a number and then hit it however we hit it, but there's no calculation to what that number is or why they set it. That impacts us more than it does those other states
right.
that are around us, just because they're not as reliant on the federal spending as we are.
And when we are, and those cutbacks take place, then obviously it's a big hit. There's nothing else to rely on.
Yeah, that's right.
Why over the years? I mean, after all, before Susana Martinez, it was Bill Richardson. I mean, so it was Democratic governor, and now it's a Republican governor. Why aren't there new initiatives to attract business and to make us less reliant?
You know, I think there are. I think just looking locally, the spaceport, you know, is something that when it first came and when Virgin Galactic, you know, when all of that was first signed, I saw real promise there. And it's, you know, to me, it's just been tragic in a literal sense that we've had one person die in a crash, but in an economic sense that, you know, we have not reaped anything on that investment.
Well, let me ask you that. If that spaceport is such a wonderful place, why did our own former governor go to work for a California spaceport? Now, Bill Richardson.
Well, because there's no money for him to be made at this spaceport here, being any kind of advisor or anything like that. And, you know, the spaceport is a wonderful place in terms of the facility, in terms of, you know, it's a first class, purpose-built commercial space facility.
Why aren't these entrepreneurs flocking?
Well, I think it's because the industry is such in its infancy, and two, because up until now they haven't gone out after them.
Mm-hmm.
They have put all of their eggs in one basket, being Virgin Galactic. They built it for Richard Branson. I mean, let's be honest. He was supposed to be flying a couple of years ago. I mean, that's how this thing originally was set up to work. And so now they're scrambling. And now they are finally going out after Jeff Bezos and the other players in this field, but there aren't very many of them. I mean, it's still, you know, very much in its infancy.
Was there any kind of exclusivity built into the Branson deal, or was he expecting?
No, except for the fact that they have one hangar and it's his.
Yeah.
And so now they're trying to get another hangar, but the legislature is saying, wait a minute, you guys are losing money head to fist, and now you're asking for more?
Do you think the spaceport is just ahead of its time? Do you think it'll catch up, or do you think perhaps that the opportunity was here and missed?
No, I still do. I still do. I still think that is an industry that will continue growing. It needs to be marketed better. And I don't know if that means changing people or if that just means changing strategy and philosophy.
Do you think if it wasn't for that Virgin Galactic accident that there would be planes or ships taken off from there?
Yes.
Right?
Already? Yes, yes.
That's kind of an excuse, though.
But even before that, it was relatively slow, right?
It wasn't happening as fast as... That's right. But if not for that accident, I said no question they'd be flying by now.
We got a call, and thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show, the retrospective.
Hi, this is Ted. You probably knew I'd call about the spaceport.
I sensed it in my bones. Go ahead, Ted.
There's been a paradigm shift for these spaceports. At first, they thought they had to be really remote, but now spaceports are being developed in, right outside the city limits of Denver, in Houston. They've got the Mid-Atlantic Spaceport in Virginia, Wallops Island. You know, it's there when people are walking away from a built spaceport to build their own spaceport. You don't have a space problem. You have a real estate problem. And there's three things in real estate. I'm sure you've heard them before: location, location, location. And we've got a spaceport that's 200 miles from Albuquerque, 100 miles from El Paso, and even then, you don't really have a hub that you're near. So we have a location problem.
Ted, what is your prediction for the future of the spaceport?
Look up, go on the internet and look up Burns Flat Spaceport in Oklahoma. And that's what I predict, a ghost town.
But a high-tech ghost town.
Well, Burns Flat is not a high-tech ghost town. It's a bunch of concrete that was built after World War II. The other possible use for Spaceport America is testing. But in the testing location, the main draw is restricted airspace. But restricted airspace is not all that is cracked up to be. Any pilot will tell you that the base of the continental control area begins at 18,000 feet, and the area around every tower is already controlled. So the spaceports are going in at airports: Midland, Denver, Houston, Mid-Atlantic. It's just, there's just no use for what we built. We did the wrong thing at the wrong time, and now it's a white elephant.
And so, well, okay. Well, thanks for the call, Ted. All right, folks. So there's no future for the spaceport.
Well, look at Los Alamos. I mean, probably not only one of the wealthiest places here in New Mexico, but all across the country.
Wealthiest county in the country.
Right. Yeah. And now that was a remote spot, obviously, because it was picked for the development of the atom bomb and so on and so forth. So just being in a remote spot for this kind of technology being developed, I agree with that. Location, location, location. But at the same time, having wide open spaces, I think, is an advantage. I would be a little bit nervous, I think, if there's a spaceport being built outside my home in the suburbs of Denver, I'd probably be concerned about that.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, we're talking about technology that just blew up, and it blew up over the Mojave Desert, which is where you want these things to blow up. You don't want them blowing up over Denver. Mm-hmm. So I just disagree with him. I think that location is an advantage. One, the restricted airspace. Two, the altitude. And three, the fact that it blows up over nowhere. Plus, people doing research don't want a whole lot of people around them. They want to be in a remote location.
That said, it was interesting talking about a high-tech ghost town.
Yeah.
I know Kelly's signaling we got to take a break, but how about
Pegasus.
Yeah, we'll get back to that.
The three words that are associated with that. But folks, got lucky to have, counting myself delighted to have Walt Rubel and my mentor and tour mentor, Mike McKay. And we're doing a retrospective of 2015, and we'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. We've got the editorial page editor and the big cheese at the Bravo Mike Industrial Complex. We'll be right back at 6:20.
Let my own Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly. You know, hey, I have a quick question before we get back on the air. I don't need to be on the air because other callers will probably be going in. But I was just up with a Facebook thing. Do they even have a road that's, you know, drivable going to that port?
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, okay. No, I'm sorry to have the pot down. The answer is that you can get there if you have a car from the southern direction.
Yeah, they still have not built the southern road. So if you have a four-wheel drive, you can.
We're
get
back
over
on the air though. Okay.
Oh, what?
Thanks, Sergio.
He always sounds like he's talking through a song.
What's that?
He sounds like he's talking through a song.
Oh, yeah.
It's 6:24. Of course, Kelly here, but I got Mike McKay. And I've got Walt Rubel here, editorial page editor, Las Cruces Sun News, and Mike McKay is one of the overseers of this. We have four studios here, so he's a leader. He's a critic at times, occasional commentator.
Overseer. It sounds like I should be carrying a bullwhip with me.
Wait a second. Did you put your bullwhip aside for the holidays?
I hung it up on my wall. It's in my office there.
It's very charming. Okay, so, and we were just talking about the spaceport. We're talking about big stories of 2015. This is a retrospective. And so Walt, we just got a call from a guy, Sergio, who always sounds like he's muffled. Like it's like a call from a, you know, some sort of a hostage crisis. Sergio, change your phone.
Yeah.
But so he's asking about the road to get to the spaceport.
Right. The Southern Road is still not built. If you and that's the road from Upham. If you have a four-wheel drive vehicle, you can use it. But, I mean, in terms of getting people to and from Las Cruces, you still have to go all the way up to TRC.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Doña Ana County paying the lion's share of the in taxes and so on for
gross-wise, yeah. I mean, in terms of gross, yes, just because we have more people. I mean, Sierra County is paying the same percentage in terms of taxes.
Right.
Obviously, they have fewer people, so.
But by virtue of the fact that we have more people, we should have better
access.
That road
should have been built 3 or 4 years ago. That's one of the disgraces, in my opinion, in terms of the management of the spaceport. I mean, I don't disagree with people who say that it has not met its potential. It has not been managed well. I just disagree with those who say it has no potential.
So what about the potential of Pegasus?
Pegasus is the model billion-dollar peopleless community.
Yeah, the ghost city. Which was going to be built here, then it was going to be built in Hobbs, and then they pulled up stakes in the middle of the night and left Hobbs and weren't heard of from a year.
Nobody noticed because there was no people.
Yeah, good point. And now it's going to be built here again is what they say. And by here, I mean, I think out by the Coralitos Ranch, that area between here and Deming.
Do they have a timetable? I'm sorry.
I was going to say, according to Ted's theory, we could use the spaceport as a ghost city. Since it's destined to be
you
got some infrastructure there, and Mike McKay's asking, what's the timeline on this puppy?
Robert Brumley is the guy who is the person behind this whole thing, and it is telling that he never answered our phone calls before, and now he is. And so maybe this is going to happen this time. He wants to do it this year. The question has always been: does he have the money? I think it's kind of a neat idea.
Never, ever been able to figure out $1 billion for an unpeopled city. I mean, where that didn't make any sense to me.
Well, in theory, you could test all kinds of different, municipal control. Municipal control, that sounds like something out of Soylent Green.
It's coming, folks.
But no, you can, in an unpopulated urban environment, test all kinds of different things. That's the theory behind it. Now, is that marketable, and is it marketable to the extent that you can recoup $1 billion investment?
Right. What's your return on investment? How many different people are you going to attract?
It doesn't make any sense. I agree they're maybe working on building a City here. I don't think they're putting $1 billion. It doesn't make any sense to me.
And investors are not flocking to this idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, so does it? He wants to build it this year. I mean, so in terms of what's his timeline, that, you know,
is it, Walt? Is it a field of dreams story?
If he builds it, they will come.
Yes.
I don't know. They may not come. He may build it. They may not come.
Just like the spaceport. Okay, so, all right. So, I was thinking about, and are we talking about state stories right now, or are we talking just local?
Where do you want to go with this, Kelly? We'll go wherever
things
you want to go.
Things that affect us, and certainly local stories affect us, and national stories affect us.
Mike, when you think of the last year, is there one story that sticks out to you?
Yeah, it's Donald Trump.
Yeah.
All right, baby.
No, it's incredible.
No, it is.
Truly remarkable. There's been nothing like this, I think, in the history of our politics. And that's when you think that would be unprecedented with all the political stories that one could dredge up over the years and improbable bedfellows and different things like that.
I agree to an extent. The only caveat I would give to that is I don't think history records flamboyant losers. So there may have been other people down through history who have had outrageous flamboyant positions. I mean, George Wallace comes to mind, but George Wallace never had the kind of support that Donald Trump has.
And exactly.
I guess where I'm going with this is if wins next year, and you're right, what happened this year was a phenomenon, and that's unlike, but I mean, in terms of historically, if this is really an historic event, he's got to win the presidency. If he loses, then it's just a footnote.
Well, we're talking about 2015.
That's
certainly
right.
2015 would be the year of Donald Trump. It remains to be seen if 2016 will be the year of Donald
Trump. I want to put out something, a little information. I did some research on his hair, and it turns out he is not a guy with a chrome dome. He's not a guy that's totally bald, it's hair on the fringes, although you might find him to be from the fringes, Mike. But he does a double comb over, and he has hair already. It's very strange.
Well, it does look like not a toupee, because frankly, if it was a toupee, the man is wealthy enough to buy something that's a little bit more realistic than what it is.
Yeah,
no,
it's real.
Yeah, it's real.
You know, I'll give him that. I won't give
him
much.
Does he color his hair?
Yeah, maybe.
It's a different shade, is it not?
It's golden.
He might do that.
So, here's, I think, the Trump question. I mean, he is clearly tapped into something in the Republican Party. The last time Steve Pearce came in and talked to us, he used the phrase that stuck in my mind. He said, the anger out there is neck deep. And you're right. It is.
But I think it's a little bit deeper than that, too. I think there's anger, but there's also a sense of disenfranchisement. There's a sense that the people who go to Washington, no matter what promises they make when they're running for office, when they get there, they leave it all behind.
I think people really angry at Washington, and that's both sides of the aisle.
Yeah.
I don't think it's so much a Republican or a Democratic thing. It may be resonating more with the Republican Party and the Tea Party and so on and so forth.
I agree with you.
The Democrats seem a little bit more sanguine, but at the same time, the people in the middle are really concerned about not making any progress.
Not making progress, stagnant economy for about a decade, broken borders, a Middle East policy they can't figure out, wild spending, and both sides of the aisle have to take credit for this because it's like there's one party in Washington.
Yeah. Each party being the wing of the same bird.
Right.
Yeah.
And so Trump comes along and he says, blow it up. I mean, that is essentially his message is, you know, he is a member of the Republican Party because that is what he saw as his best opportunity towards the presidency. And I think he was right. But he is not clearly somebody who has spent his lifetime being a Republican foot soldier. I mean, he is a guy who has tapped into all of this anger that we're talking about. He has had an odd, you know, a good old fashioned dose of xenophobia and nativism,
populism,
but also, you know, fear of the other. I mean, that is a big part of his campaign is fear of the other.
I think there's one thing that people have noticed in this nationally, how people go to Washington and lose this sense that I'm representing somebody with a particular view.
Yeah.
they get kind of caught up. I think because America is like the premier nation of its time, they get caught up in this kind of like, we're the world leader and we're doing all these things. A lot of stuff that people are not comfortable with, and it's time, year in, year out decision-making for that. And so the general population, their aspirations, their dreams, their hopes, their beliefs are left behind. And like Mike says, you both said it, the anger is really boiling out there at this lack of representation. I think that's what it comes down to ultimately. Folks, let's take another break here. And there's many stories that are local we're going to get into, but I do agree with Mike. The top story has got to be, at some level, Trump, because he threatens our whole understanding and model of what it means to be a politician and run for office. It's 6:34, a little bit chilly out there. Be careful on the step. There's going to be some black ice on the road, but there's probably some black ice on your front porch. I fell down the other day. I think I mentioned that. And we'll be right back at 6:34. AM Las Cruces, 1450, KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, and Mike McKay and Walt Rubel from the Sun News. We'll be right back.
She didn't recognize the basic first, but then her eyes flew open wide. She went to hug me and she filled her purse, and we laughed until we cried.
All right, so I'm looking at some of my top 10 stories for locally. The jail takeover is one. I'm just going to throw these out.
Yeah.
County clerk debacle with the Social Security mm-hmm. numbers, sheriff's lawsuit against the county commission, the church bombing, the recall, the county tax, and then I threw in the Susanna's party because she's from down here, and that was just in the news. But
the minimum wage, I'd throw that one in as well.
Yeah. Got it. We got room for two more.
Okay. We're building our top 10 list.
Yes.
I'll give out the telephone number. Maybe some people will think in terms of what about that story?
523-1450, folks. 523-1450 to call into AM Las Cruces. And got some wisdom in here today.
I was going to say, I did. At the Sun News, we basically broke up the local into three stories. We used to do a top 10, but this year we just picked three. And our three were the minimum wage and, you know, where is that now? The church bombings. And then we took all of those county stories. I mean, I think you have five things on there, your top 10 list, that are all from the county. And we just made those all into one story that ran today.
The church bombings.
Yeah.
Have they made any advance in their investigation?
That's been real frustrating. You know, I mean, they never, it's always an ongoing investigation, and they're always, you know, following every lead and searching for every clue. But, you know,
it's kind of interesting. These things don't seem to go anywhere. There was a situation back in the summer, you may recall, certainly not one of the big stories of 2015, but if it comes to Bravo Mike Communications, it had to be the SWAT story here locally in this building.
Yeah.
Where there were several people in the building. It happened, I think, around 6 o'clock in the evening. We had several people inside the building, and there was a report that there was a 911 call, a bomb threat coming from our switchboard.
Okay.
And not just an anonymous call or something. They could get it for 527-1111, which is our number, I think. And they came out and they surrounded the building. SWAT teams, there was quite a response, different organizations and so on. And one by one, they got the people out of the building who were witnesses and said, no, there's nothing going on. Nobody is being held at knife point or anything like that. And they really weren't interviewed all that long. They were everybody was taken away from the building, and the situation went on for hours, and a lot of ordnance was fired, actually. At what? We don't know. We found bean bags and shells and different things.
Yeah.
We found a bean bag embedded in one of our air conditioning units on the roof. And we never got an explanation as how they could have been tapped into our phone system as to make the caller ID. I mean, that's a significant story.
Yeah.
Way beyond what happened to our building at all. Our doors were smashed in or what. But could, in terms of terrorism on a larger issue, people can make these calls from places and misidentify.
Well, so you never did find out how the call was made or where, how all of that happened?
Nothing.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It was weird. And I mean, for a while, and there was even a report out there that someone had been injured in the building, and there was misinformation that got to me and stuff. And I think maybe somebody on the staff.
Well, the original story was that somebody was holding people, three hostages at knife point. They were going to start, killing people unless, I'm not quite sure, unless what. But again, it was, once the police arrived here, it was fairly, people were in various parts of the building. So I don't know why it went on for hours. Some have suggested, and I can understand this, once they're called out, then they're going to use it for practice and whatnot.
This is
for practice on your
radio station.
Yes, right. Oh, I mean, all our internal doors, anything that was locked, bashed in with battering rams.
You have a hard time opening your door now because it had been kicked in. I know that for a fact because I see you every morning struggling with it.
Yeah. I actually need one of those battering rams. I'll borrow one. But no, again, the larger issue is, how easy is it for somebody to tap into a phone system and make it seem like you're calling from here when you're calling from some other place?
Yeah.
And
that
to me is significant. And never any explanation or, for that matter, any indication that there is an ongoing investigation.
Did you consider sending a bill to the police department?
Oh, we did file for insurance.
Sure, yeah.
And we did get an insurance claim to make repairs, but
thank goodness. All right, so some of the local, and I mean, Walt, what is the story that sticks out to you the most?
Well, to me, there are two. The county, like I said, all of those to me are lumped into one story. It all goes back, I think, to the tax hike that was passed in April. And at the time that tax hike was passed, there were promises made to the sheriff, which was totally political cover. I mean, that you have to remember that tax hike was passed after the voters had said no on two different occasions.
Right.
And so they needed political cover. They said, okay, we know the sheriff is a sympathetic, has a sympathetic cause here. If we promise, a bunch of this money will go to him, we won't look as bad. They made that promise, and then they weren't able to fulfill it. And
well,
I think all of the other problems have stemmed from that.
And we've talked about that. Let's come back and talk about that. To me, it's, I think, maybe the biggest story of the year in the county.
Yeah, I do, too.
Kelly O'Connell, and I'm here with Mike McKay, my boss, my trainer and occasional sparring partner on the air. And Walt Rubel, editorial page editor, Las Cruces Sun News. And we're having a retrospective going through the big stories of the year. 523-1450, though, it's not complete until you get your opinion in here. 523-1450. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, and we will be right back. Hey, it's Kelly. It's Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. This is Marcia.
Marcia.
I don't want to go on the air. I just wanted to know, do you know what was going on at Sam's and Ruby Tuesday's last night?
No. I mean, what did you notice?
Well, when we drove by, we took some friends home. They were having problems with their truck. And there must have been, I would say 8 to 10 police cars, a fire truck, and all the way from in front of Sam's back into where Ruby Tuesday's was. And there were policemen, I guess, with the flashlights looking along the curbs. And, of course, traffic had come to a complete stop. So
bizarre.
When we got home, we didn't hear anything about it on the news and thought we would just call and ask if you knew anything about it.
Well, everybody's shaking their head here, so I don't know.
Okay.
Thanks, Marcia.
Sure.
Happy New Year. That one. I wonder what it was.
Yeah. Well, folks, we're getting into the kind of the top stories of 2015, and we're kind of sticking on, I guess, this situation at the county, which I think Walt has correctly indicated is a series of stories coming out of a power struggle between the county commission and really the sheriff's office.
Right. And so what happened after that is there just complete distrust between, I think, Billy Garrett and Wayne Hancock are the two, you know, prominent ones, and Kiki V. Hill on the other side, and Julia Brown, the county manager, in that as well. And so you've had one thing after another. It's just, as I talked to Ben Rossin yesterday, one escalation after another. The sheriff does something, then the county does something, then the sheriff says something. And among your top 10 lists are the fact that, so we had this meeting in April, went on for 9 hours. Leticia Duarte Benavides tried to put something in writing that says, we're going to give the sheriff, you know, his cut of the money. They go into executive session. They're in there for hours. They come back and they say, no, we're not going to do that. Kiki goes apoplectic. He said, you know, he files a complaint with the attorney general saying that this is a violation of the open meetings law. That leads to the investigation that the county, what Billy Garrett said is, well, we got a complaint from an employee, so we had to investigate it. So they hire this Albuquerque firm to investigate the sheriff. That leads the sheriff to file a lawsuit against the county claiming, oh, you did that trying to silence me. So that's a violation of my First Amendment right. So he has a lawsuit pending in federal court, and we haven't even got to the jail takeover yet. I mean, that is how it has gone this year in county government.
But I think the top story then is the jail takeover.
Because yeah, that's where it all came to a head.
I think that was the most kind of jaw-dropping and stunning news,
especially the way it played out.
Yes,
that's exactly right.
With the did they send a SWAT team or something like a SWAT team?
Something like that.
Something
yeah.
like a SWAT team to take over the jail. I'm sure.
Yeah, they came marching in and, you know, kind of military precision and, you know.
And then the Kiki V. Hill press conference with county manager, and
Julia Brown shows up and does a complete 360 slam dunk with the paperwork.
Right,
it's over.
Right.
On live air.
That's right. The cameras are rolling. He's in front of the courthouse, and, you know, he is having his moment in the sun. And Julia Brown steps up to him with no, you know, how you doing? No, uh-huh. no nothing. Slaps that on his chest, orders him to get out, turns on her heels and walks away. But the day started at 6 a.m. with the arrest of Chris Barella, who has been a longtime detention center. He was survived the Slevin case, which, you know, I thought was interesting.
Would have taken down a lesser man.
That would have taken down a lesser man or a man with a more, well, a different county commission. But anyway, he gets charged with fraud for allegedly taking money from this inmate welfare fund, which is nothing new. This is something that was investigated years ago. We knew about it. The county knew about it. Chose not to take any action. And now Kiki comes in, reinvestigates, you know, it's not like he did something different or new. He decides with Mark D'Antonio that now it is a crime. And so at 6 o'clock in the morning, they arrest Barella. By 8:30, they have marched in precision into the detention center and they are taking over.
Now, part of that story, apparently, is that they're not alleging he used it for his own benefit.
That's right.
And so what are they saying that he used it for?
That's the part that I don't get. I mean, socks. And I've heard
of sex scandals, but this is a socks scandal?
Here's what I know about it. I have heard all along these stories about Chris Barella inappropriately taking money and using it for the PAL boxing club.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've been told, that has been so long ago that those allegations are beyond the statute of limitations, and this is what they could get. And it seems, you know, obviously Mark D'Antonio made the choice, so he believes there was a crime committed. But, you know, this wouldn't be the first time that his office has charged something and then come back later and, you know, accepted a plea deal that was greatly reduced from what the original charges were.
And the claim is technically it's embezzlement because he took something that it did not belong to him and used it for purposes that it was not supposed to. It was not
you know.
Right.
They didn't give pre-approval to. Okay, so actually, we've got to take another break here. And so Kelly O'Connell here with Mike McKay, who's the kind of the chief operating guy here in these four studios, and Walt Rubel, editorial page editor, Las Cruces Sun News. We will be back in just a moment to finish up this hour. And we got another hour, but there's so many stories out there. We got people calling in. Just be a little bit patient. And at 6:57, we're about to conclude the first hour. This show is going to be rebroadcast on the first day, January 1, New Year's Day. And actually, it was Mike McKay's suggestion that we do this. But, you know, I'm sitting here talking to you guys, listening. We could go on for 10 hours about some of the stories. I mean, it has been kind of an eventful year. And we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. We just got a few seconds here.
It's not a problem. Just real quick, didn't V Hill and Garrett run against each other for sure?
Did V Hill and Garrett run against each other?
No, V Hill ran against
Craig Buckingham.
Yeah, thank you.
It was
you.
A big field, wasn't it?
Oh, okay.
It was on the Democratic primary.
Okay, all right. I was confused. I was saying if they were running against each other for sure, then no wonder there's a power struggle, but.
I
had my facts wrong then. I apologize.
Thanks for the call. What I think we need to conclude this is a old-fashioned cage fight.
and where he probably got that from is Billy Garrett was in the same election. I mean, he was on that same ballot. He was just running for county commissioner.
One last call here. Thanks for the call. Okay, folks. So, listen, we're going to take a break here on the hour. We got so much to cover, but we're going to get into it. We got to get a little bit more into this story on the county. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOB with Kelly O'Connell. Got Mike McKay, Big Cheese, in these stations, and Walt Rubel, editorial page editor, Las Cruces Sun News, and we will be back. Well, good morning. If you're just tuning in, we've got Mike McKay here, Executive Vice President, Bravo Mike Communications. There are four studios in our building, in our plush and sprawling complex here, and Mike is Executive Vice President. You also know him from 101 Gold, where he is arguably the most successful broadcaster in the history of Mesilla Valley. I'm guessing.
Who's arguing?
Nobody's arguing. And Walt Rubel piping in. Editorial page editor, Las Cruces Sun News. So we're doing a show today, a retrospective on 2015, and we went through a lot of stories so far, maybe just scratching the surface of most of them. But we were talking about the jail, the takeover of the jail, the county clerk debacle, the lawsuit with the sheriff that Walt Rubel is kind of insisting all these stories are related. Of course, they are. The church bombing. A county tax increase, minimum wage, the recall. I threw in Susanna's party just because she's from down here and it's just been in the news, but still room for a little bit more. 5-2-3-14-50. Mike?
It's interesting you were talking about Susanna Martinez. You brought, and I think most people recall in 2012, her name was brought up quite a bit with regard to a possible vice presidential nomination. And
right.
She spoke very prominently at the Republican convention. I wonder going into 2016, given this, when you had to put all things in perspective, it's still a relatively minor incident. Certainly not a huge story in and of itself, except that it involves the governor. I wonder whether or not she's going to be part of the conversation in 2016.
in my opinion, it hurts her for VP. It doesn't probably hurt her for a cabinet position. But, I think for VP, one, she just doesn't bring a lot. I mean, she checks the boxes for, the identity politics. She gives you a woman. She gives you an Hispanic. She doesn't bring you a lot in terms of electoral votes coming from New Mexico. And I don't think, the rest of the Rocky Mountain West is all that enamored with her. I don't know. It hurts her. I don't think it's a disqualifying thing.
Certainly, which organization just came out ranking state governments and where New Mexico ended 50th?
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yes, but that's in terms of state government, and it was the worst in the country.
Yeah.
At number 50, is interesting because usually Mississippi is on the bottom of every list.
But sometimes that stuff doesn't matter. I mean, I've seen it before where if you are popular nationally, if you give a good speech, which she did, if you go on the TV shows and you perform well, which she hasn't done yet, but you can build a national persona, a national image, even if you're not all that well liked at home.
Right. And I think it's also fair to say that probably that kind of ranking, whoever did this ranking, it reflects of, a lot of historic management as opposed to just this administration.
Well, like you say, I mean, we are at the bottom of so many lists. The thank God for Mississippi, because we're always 49th, it seems like.
Instead of the land of enchantment, we are the state slogan should be thank God for Mississippi. Yeah. I like that.
Well, and that 24/7 Wall Street was the organization that provided that, and they're a financial news organization, but the governor hotly disputes that ranking.
Not surprising.
Well, I'm just curious, what are they saying that why are we ranked so low, do they think?
Well, they're calling it the worst run state government, and they claim that this is from the Santa Fe New Mexican. Mississippi is saying thank God for New Mexico. New Mexico. Well, it reminds me of the story of the guys who are out hunting and they run into the bear.
Yeah.
And they're running along, and the guy's like, "I sure hope we can escape this." And the other guy says, "Well,
do you think you can outrun that bear?"
Yeah, and the answer is that
I just have to outrun you.
Yes. So Mississippi is outrunning us. Thanks for correcting my joke there. But New Mexico is the worst run state in the country, with some of the worst social and economic outcomes, according to the new report. And only a handful of states struggle with similar levels of extreme poverty as New Mexico. More than one in every 10 households in the state earns less than $10,000 each year. Second highest proportion after Mississippi. The state also struggles with one of the nation's highest violent crime rates. Close to 600 violent crimes are reported each year per 100,000 residents. One of the highest nationally. And other things that they run into that they talk about, debt per capita, 22nd highest at 3,468 credit rating, AA+, unemployment rate 6.8%, second highest, median household income 44,000, eighth lowest, poverty rate 21%, second highest. And here's another thing to remember. About a quarter of the city that we live in, they're living below the poverty line, and then another quarter are right above it. So half the people in our own city are desperately poor.
Well, that's right. And certainly all of that can't be laid at the feet of Governor Martinez.
No, of course not.
But when you're being called the worst run state in the country, you're the leader of that state.
You're not going to put that on your resume.
No, that's right. And I don't know if that's, obviously that's somebody's opinion. That's a little bit objective, but
it's a little bit subjective too. They're listing.
That's right. Criteria. That's right.
And also, the fact of the matter is that when Susanna came in, I guess probably people were thinking we could have a Reagan revolution or something. And with our history, probably not very realistic, but a state that's top heavy with government jobs might be hard to turn around using the ocean liner metaphor.
Especially in the desert.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. But I also think, listen, when she ran for re-election, she said her top accomplishment was we recovered from the recession without raising taxes, which is a little bit dubious because they did pass the hold harmless thing that allowed every city and every county to raise taxes. That all came from the state. But, you know, she can say, my hands are clean. I didn't do that. But that's it. I mean, that is the beginning, the middle, and the end of her list of accomplishments for 4 years. Okay, great. You didn't raise taxes. You'll get conservative credit for that. But what have you accomplished? What new things? I mean, she spent an awful lot of time and energy in education, and I don't think the results are there. And I think that she there is a hatred between teachers in throughout the state and Hannah Scandera, the Secretary of Education. I mean, the reforms that she has tried to put through with such an emphasis on testing.
Has Scandera ever been confirmed?
She has. She was confirmed in her fourth year in office.
Wow. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
That in and of itself situation.
That is exactly right. And so the governor and the legislature have been at odds for 4 years over education reform. The governor has had a heavy reliance on testing. She's wanted to put in things like merit pay. You know, all of these reforms that she has embraced conservative core, which is sort of an anathema to a lot of not common core, I'm sorry, which is anathema to a lot of conservatives. New Mexico has embraced that common core.
Haven't a lot of conservatives changed their mind on that? I thought that there was initially when common core was started to gain some traction, there was a tremendous amount of support for it. I think a lot of people have changed their minds.
I think that's probably right. But Jeb Bush is just getting, you know, beaten over the head and is running away from it as fast as he can, because he did at one time as governor. I think that was after governor of Florida. But he was a strong supporter at the beginning of that whole Common Core movement. So all of those things, I think, can be laid at the governor's footsteps. I don't think the state has been well managed. And so, you know, she's not personally responsible for everything, you know, for generations of poverty. Clearly, she's not responsible for. But has she made things better?
Oh, here's a question.
I don't think so.
Here's the conservative question. To what extent has her leadership been conservative?
I can't answer that. I don't know.
Well, certainly she's held the line on taxes. I would argue that the education reforms are not conservative because they are driven from the state.
And nationalized or
that's right.
And conservatives like to see leadership done as much as possible locally.
That's right. I mean, local control of schools is typically, you know, a foundational belief of conservatives. And so she's gone against that. And I also think it's just her personality. And we saw when she was the prosecutor here that she develops. You're either for me or you're against me. You know, that happened throughout her whole tenure here. And
isn't that a common trait of politicians?
Yeah, maybe so.
And I mean, you've got to have a certain level of self-belief and even righteousness. I'm not saying that she's overly righteous, but you've got to have this kind of, and a lot of people have pointed at Barack Obama and said he's overly righteous. He's overly confident. He's overly boastful. But Mike, I think you're right. But there's got to be follow through, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think politicians have to be strong in their belief that they're the person for that particular job, whichever it is, all the way from the local level to the national level and so on. So I do think that that's inherent in somebody putting themselves up for election in the first place.
Which brings us back to Trump. I think Trump has torn the facade off this idea that there's all these different candidates out there that represent different things. You see these people on the Republican side, which are much more diverse probably than the left, than the Democratic side, that are kind of grouped together now. And I'm kind of fascinated by that Donald Trump made all these people look the same almost.
I find it so interesting. I think probably among supporters, Donald Trump, one of the big things they'll always put forth, you know, but at least he's honest.
Yeah.
And his honesty seems to just emanate from him to his supporters. Too. But
he's from
is
New
he
York.
Really?
He's from New York, Mike.
Yeah. As am I. But what's your point?
So was he being honest when he said, I saw these thousands of people cheering on 9/11?
I've never said this on the news, but I do remember some. I either saw a clip of it or I read about it somewhere that there were these groups of people that were celebrating the collapse. It could have been in Kabul for all I know, but I just remember it.
Well, I believe his statement was, I watched it's not like I read something somewhere.
That's right.
I watched as thousands cheered in
Trenton,
New Jersey.
Yeah, no, that's right. And that didn't happen. So that was dishonest. And there are example after example.
Was he being honest several years ago when he was defending Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and all the supposed, well, the transgressions of Bill Clinton? No, they don't mean anything. Of course, it'd be interesting if Hillary Clinton is facing off against Donald Trump. There's an ad that's going to be run by the DNC for sure. Donald Trump staunchly defending both Hillary and
Bill
Clinton.
All right, but let me ask you this, Mike. Donald Trump goes head to head with Hillary in terms of the insults and the record and the, you know, exposés. This is who this person really is. Remember these things. And then Hillary's attacking him and everything. Well, who comes out on top of that, that mudslinging?
Well, I think when it's one-on-one, it's going to be a whole different story. And I don't know yet. I would surmise that if Donald Trump is in fact the nominee, and Hillary Clinton is a nominee.
A question in my mind, Mike McKay has represented himself on the show as a centrist. Is there any chance of Mike McKay pulling the lever for Donald Trump?
No.
Yeah.
You never know.
I would say at this point, no.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good note to take a break on. And AM Las Cruces here, 1450 KOBE. We've got the Executive Vice President, Bravo Mike Communications, Mike McKay, Big Cheese, and Walt Rubel, Editorial Page Editor, Las Cruces Sun News. We're going to be right back talking about, a retrospective on the best stories of 2015. It's 7:20, and we're going to come back and reload on some of these other stories. Folks, we're here. I'm here with Mike McKay and Walt Rubel. Walt is executive page editor, Las Cruces Sun News. Mike's executive vice president, Bravo Mike Communications. And so we're talking a retrospective of the year 2015, getting it off into a little bit of a barnyard squabble over the Trump off the air. But have we even dug down into this county story far enough yet? I mean,
we haven't touched on
everything?
The city story.
And let's get into it.
Story is as interesting as the county story. I really do.
Well, what is the city story?
Because for the very first time, in my opinion, we had a class of business owners rise up and rise up clumsily and ham-handedly, in my opinion. But rise up. For years, we've been hearing these complaints that the city isn't business friendly enough. Especially, you know, and this I think goes back to if people remember when Philip Philippou was here. At that time, there was a very business friendly city council that was very pro growth, very pro development. And that development that Philippou had planned, which would have added thousands of new homes, dramatically changed the look and feel of Las Cruces. And that really woke people up.
Did it better the city, in your opinion?
Well, they certainly, it changed the city because they certainly, the next city election that came along, I don't know if that was the birth of the Progressive Voter Alliance, but it was certainly the seed that led to the birth. And so now that sort of culminated this year when we had CAFE do the minimum wage increase, and that just roiled city.
Let's
council.
Get into that a little bit, Walt, because you had mentioned it before. I think that this fight over the minimum wage exposed some fault lines, and you know there was a casualty there. You know, you've got please don't call me Tiny Small. He's not even in office anymore.
Well, that's right. There was a recall against him and two other officials that wasn't successful. But anytime you have people going door to door petitioning for a recall, in this case, it was alleged, and I think with some evidence, that they were petitioning dishonestly for the recall. Obviously, that doesn't help the person when you have young people going door to door saying bad things about you.
where did CAFE originate? Do we know who they are?
Yeah,
where they are?
I have done a little bit of research on this, and not to cut you off, Walt, but they're outreach of a left part of the Catholic Church. I did some research. I think it somehow comes out of originally from Chicago, this movement. I can do a little bit of research now, but Walt.
No, that's right. It's a faith-based movement, a social welfare movement. And Sarah Nolan, now Sierra Fuentes, I apologize if I got her last name wrong. But anyway.
No blood, no foul.
Yeah, she was the leader, and she really was able to create this grassroots group of volunteers who got behind this effort. Collected more than 6,000 signatures. That's a hard thing to do. I mean, let's not forget that at the same time they were doing their effort, there was another petition that was going to put in a voter ID for municipal elections. They were going to go do the same thing, and that just sort of died out, and we never heard from them again. It's not easy to get 6,000 petitions. And they spent all summer, you know, going door to door, going to all the big events and setting up a table. They worked their rear ends off. They got it done. They go to the city. By every logical reading of the city charter, the city had two choices. You can either put it to a vote, which they should have done, in my opinion, or you can say, okay, we accept it. But what the city did was they got a little clever. They got some advice from their attorney. And they said, okay, we'll accept it, and then we'll immediately change it to whatever we want it to be. Well, that can't be how the referendum system is supposed to work. And so I think that just the snowball got rolling from there. The minimum wage did go through, although it's not in the way CAFE wanted it. It got delayed by 2 years in terms of the implementation, and that was done by Nathan Small. But that still didn't please the business community who funded this recall effort. Who, you know, got together with the Chamber of Commerce. And that was a bizarre thing for me to see the Chamber of Commerce actively involved in a municipal election where all of their candidates lost. And so now you have the Chamber of you have everybody sitting in government in elected, you know, government in Las Cruces who knows that the Chamber of Commerce is against them.
It doesn't surprise me, of course, the portion of the business community where,
yeah,
many of their employees, or perhaps even the bulk of their employees, are on minimum wage. That means when that changes,
that's
when that
right.
goes up, that means across the board, that person's expenses are going to go up. On the other hand, people do need a living wage to be able to pay rent and buy food and so on. But I bet you there's a lot of people who are very, very ambivalent about the whole idea of raising people up to the level where they can sustain their rent and so on what is essentially a minimum wage job.
Here's the thing, and you've been involved in business and had employees working for you. There is a practical limit to what you can pay people in lower level jobs. I mean, this is not coming out of any theory. It's a fact that there's only so much money in any organization to pay for labor.
Yes, that's true. And one might also say that people who are in minimum wage jobs, in order to get ahead and earn more money, is to get another job, a better job.
Yeah, right.
So now, where are those jobs? That's another question altogether. They're not necessarily there. But the idea of raising the level of people who are in so-called minimum wage jobs to the point where they earn a good living, defined, is...
Well, that's
a different story altogether.
There's a couple of illustrations that I think are interesting in this. There are businesses in places like Seattle or San Francisco where they raised the minimum wage, where restaurants, bookstores, and stuff went out of business. And they said even though they were supporting this minimum wage increase, have gone out of business. They can't afford it anymore. The company that became famous where the guy was going to pay all of his employees $70,000, he was a credit card company that they service credit cards and such in Seattle. A couple of things happened that were interesting. Number one, top talent left the company because they're you know, I've been loyal here, been working. I'm making $70,000. Now the person who's doing A, B, or C is also making $70,000. There's a lot of bitterness caused by that. Number two, the financial model didn't work, and they're, I think, going possibly into receivership, into bankruptcy. The third thing was the founder's brother, who was still a partner, sued him because he thought it was a misuse of the company assets.
I can imagine why, especially. But what I don't understand, and I remember the story, but I don't remember the specific details. You're saying that somebody who was taking out the trash made $70,000. That was the floor.
Yeah.
But people who were
engineers and things like
running,
that were also
running the business, they were still making $70,000? That doesn't make sense.
Well, think about this. You've got a business that's generating a certain amount of income. The owner is worth maybe $1 million, and it's an up-and-coming financial business. You suddenly supersize everybody's their salary, but you don't supersize the top level, because where are you going to take somebody who's making 70 or 80 or whatever? Are you going to double that? Where does the money come from?
But if the theory is that we have an income gap in this country that needs closed, then yes, you raise the people at the bottom.
But here's the thing. By doing that, and he got a lot of applause from around the world, and there's always kind of this dewy-eyed support of socialism,
right,
that comes out of, or the socialistic impulse to get everybody on the same page,
right,
for income. There's support from that, but there's no hard-eyed steely-eyed view of what's the impact. If you destroy a business by making everybody's income the same, that can't possibly be a good outcome for the business.
Well, of course, and that is an extreme example. But
that is an example that actually occurred in our lifetimes, in which the person who did it was seeking to do exactly what you're talking about.
Not at all. What you're explaining is an entrepreneur who got a great deal of national press for an experiment. Certainly, this isn't the way most people run their business.
Yeah, I don't think that necessarily will be the law of the land or anything like that.
But my point is that this guy is buying into where you're coming from.
No.
Absolutely.
Where I'm coming from is that there needs to be a livable minimum wage.
How do you define that?
Well, you define that a lot of different ways. I think by tying it to indexing to the what am I trying to think of here?
Cost of living.
Cost of living. That's right. Indexing it to the cost of living. And the way we have done it is that we let it go for 5 or 6 years, it lags way behind, and then we bump it up, and then it lags way behind, and then we bump it up, and so.
But the idea, if in fact that's accurate, that this guy raised everybody's salary to $70,000, but the people who are already at the top of the heap didn't get any raise, that doesn't make any sense
at all.
Obviously, that would be resentment.
Yeah.
All right, folks, we're taking a little break here, and we're tapping into the, the issue of minimum wage, the minimum wage fight. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE with Kelly O'Connell and Mike McKay, Executive Vice President, Bravo Mike Communications, Walt Rubel, Editorial Page Editor, Las Cruces Sun News. This will be replayed on the first of the year, and we'll take a little break and come back and dig into some more of these important 2015 stories. 7:35 on the button. It's 7:39, and I've got Walt Rubel here and Mike McKay, minus their honorifics, and Mike's at the local newspaper, Walt is, and Mike is the big cheese here. 26 degrees out there right now, a little bit chilly. All right, so we've got, I don't know, 15 minutes to sum this puppy up with the big stories of this year, Mike.
Well, again, I go back to the fact that Donald Trump is month after month after month, all the pundits were saying, well, he's done it this time.
Yeah.
He's really, stuck his foot in his mouth this time, and it never seems to make any, well, actually, I was about to say it never seems to make any difference. It does make a difference. In fact, his poll numbers keep on going up.
It only makes him stronger. Well, I like the horror movies where you hit them with the electricity and they grow bigger.
I can't imagine what kind of meetings that in the other camps his Republican opponents.
Jeb
must
Bush.
Be
I mean,
pulling
Jeb
their
Bush
hair
at
out.
The beginning of this thing had amassed millions of dollars, and he was really building, he was trying to build this sense of invincibility, just like his brother did, where, okay, I've got all the fundraisers on my side. I've got, you know, all this momentum. I have name recognition like nobody else. I'm just going to clear the field, and I'm going to waltz away with this thing.
Interestingly enough, you talk about name recognition. He doesn't even use his last name on all his signage.
He uses the exclamation point.
So I don't know whether the name recognition was a boon, but you're right. He was poised to walk into the nomination in much the same way that Hillary was poised to walk into the nomination in 2008. He certainly, despite all the money he's got behind him and the support, he has not been an impressive candidate, I don't think, in any way, shape, or form.
Put it this way, with his political background, his father president, his brother president, he himself a very successful governor of Florida, he spent $50 million. Trump has spent about $5 million. And where do they stand?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's been Trump has been a phenomenon like I have not seen in my lifetime.
Really? Really? And getting back to the honesty thing, again, so many people just, he's honest. He's honest. Well, he certainly shoots from the lip. There's no question about that. He says what he thinks will resonate with the public, and he's done so very successfully. But I would argue,
you know,
he's saying these things. It doesn't necessarily mean he's inherently
honest. Here I'm going to throw back to, on the air what I said off the air. The American model is representational government. People want to elect individuals who represent their beliefs, and they see constantly. And while I know you noticed this, and Mike, you noticed this, we don't want people who are elected who are great people, who are geniuses, who come up with some far-fetched idea for how to cure the universe's problems and stuff. We want someone to stand up and represent what we believe. So why is it so bad if he stands up and gives voice to the frustrated millions?
Giving voice to frustrated millions in and of itself, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, maybe what he's doing, and Walt, is there any credit given to him for going after political correctness? Because whether you support the ideas within political correctness, it does shut down dialogue a lot of times.
Yes, and the answer to your question is yes. I mean, he has tapped into a legitimate complaint or a legitimate concern that people have. The younger generation especially, it seems to me, has been led to believe that anything that offends them has to be shut down, is wrong.
Do you remember the days, guys, when there was a statement that was circulating that was more than just lip service? People said, I disagree with you 100%, but I will fight to the death for your right to say it.
Sure.
What happened to that sentiment?
I think that sentiment is still alive and well. I mean, look how many varied opinions you have. Not everybody is in lockstep with one thing or another.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're not part of this establishment opinion, this politically correct opinion, that's perilous for your career, for your business relationships, for your reputation.
Yeah. But I think when Trump takes positions like we're not going to let any Muslims come into the country, that goes beyond political correctness. That is fundamentally changing the nature of who we have always been.
Why not see it as a shot across the bow?
Well, obviously some people do see that as a shot across the bow, but at the same time, others would argue that you're taking aim at the wrong bow.
I'm sorry, Mike, but if it's a shot across the bow and not actually a legitimate proposal that he intends to carry out, then what does that say about this whole honesty question?
The whole political correctness thing, when it comes down to this, people are annoyed when a politician is asked a question and they dance around it. That people do really despise that. That said, words do matter. They do matter. And they resonate in other countries and with other political leaders and so on. So words have to be chosen. When you're in that kind of a position, it's important that you choose words carefully.
Let me ask you this, and this is from the belief of the conservatives. You couldn't get any more failed than Barack Obama. Let's roll the dice. That's what a lot of people think.
Well, sure, I agree with you. A lot of people think that. But the original statement, you could not get more failed than Barack Obama, is patently false.
Isn't that a political opinion?
It's a political opinion.
but I reject it outright.
I'm saying your opinion, your take on that. I mean, that all depends on where you're coming from on the on this wave band of beliefs and stuff. Well,
you know, I just think that there have been conservatives who for 7 years have said this is the ruination of our country.
Is it racism?
No, I didn't say that.
I believe that there's a certain amount of racism in that.
Well, there's going to be racism towards a black person from some percent of the country. That there are people that are racist, but setting that aside, is there any legitimate criticism of this guy?
Of course there is. There's a lot of legitimate criticism. Point is that when you have spent 7 years invested in this narrative that he is going to be the ruination of our country, what do you do when he gets to the end of the eighth year and we're not ruined? Well, you can't give up on that story.
You throw a party.
No, you insist that you were right all along, and he really did ruin the country, despite all of the evidence to the contrary.
So he's been a successful president, in your opinion?
I don't think he has ruined the country.
Give him a letter grade.
That's a big difference.
Give him a letter grade.
That's a big difference.
Right? Give him a letter grade.
I'd give him a C plus, maybe. Yeah,
you asked me that before, and I gave him the same thing.
I want to see if he's improved his penmanship or something.
You know, the thing of it is, you often refer to the last 8 years. Well, 7 years, it'll be 8 years by. But, you know, I know people hate to hear this, but he did inherit a pretty bad situation. Has he improved it with the hope and change to what many of his supporters would have hoped for?
Of course not.
No.
Now, the question answered itself. But let me ask you this. Didn't he open the door to the Ben Carsons and the Trumps? Aren't we paying for the idea that as long as you're a clever guy, you can come in and run the country without any experience or without much experience? Walt?
No, I don't. I think if he opened the door to anybody, it would be Marco Rubio. I mean, he has a resume that is very, so does Ted Cruz. But Barack Obama was a U.S. senator. Barack Obama was a state legislator before that. It's not like he was spending his whole life doing brain surgery or hotel deals.
Okay. 747, we're talking here with Mike McKay. While flying the friendly skies, 747 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, get your opinion on the record, 523-1450. We're going to be right back and finish this up these last few minutes. It's Kelly.
Hi. My name's JR, and I got a quick question, something that I don't understand, and I just how can Hillary Clinton run for presidency when her husband was impeached? Didn't she take an oath also? Don't the First Lady also take an oath? And if she was impeached, doesn't that impeach her? Hello?
JR, anything else?
No, that was all. I was just curious about the whole First Lady thing, because I remember when I was a kid, I remember watching one of the First Ladies take an oath right after the President took his oath. But okay, that's it.
Thanks. Okay, 7:50, and the sands running through the hourglass. Got Walt Rubel, editorial page editor, Las Cruces Sun News, executive vice president, Bravo My Communications, Mike McKay here. Predictions, guys. It's that time.
Already? Predictions?
Wow. Yes.
We're in the last 10 minutes.
Are we going to end? Yeah. I predict that Martin O'Malley will not be the Democratic nominee for president.
Wow.
How's that?
Wow.
That, am I going out on a limb here?
I was
going
to say.
I agree.
I predict that Donald Trump will not win the Republican nomination, despite all the evidence to the contrary.
I'm predicting Donald Trump wins.
Yeah.
In a
all the way.
With a walk-off grand slam. Yeah.
Donald Trump will be in the
yes.
And Ivanka will be in the
and there's going to be new training in hair salons across the nation with the double comb over.
No, you really do think that he will be the president.
I don't see how Hillary defends herself against him.
I think it'll. I think the dynamic will change so dramatically once it is one-on-one and the rest of the country is engaged.
Guys, let me ask you something. Why do you think that his magic poison sauce that he puts on all the other candidates, that Hillary's going to be bulletproof on that?
Because he's putting that magic poison sauce on the Republican candidates, on the Republican voters. That's whose mind he is convincing. He's not convincing the nation.
But
he's convincing a percentage of the Republican voters.
Mike said earlier there's a lot of disenfranchised, disenchanted voters out there.
There are, but I don't necessarily think that he would be the choice of all of the disenfranchised voters.
Okay.
Clearly not. I mean, that's why Bernie Sanders is doing so well. But Bernie Sanders is not going to be the Democratic nominee, and his supporters will go to Hillary Clinton.
Bernie Sanders needs to relocate to KFC, but we've got a caller here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Oh, please, 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 for the new year, nominate the Trumper guy. Oh, please do that. When you do that, we will see Hillary president, Hillary Clinton president, Bernie Sanders, and just control liberals for as far as the eye can see. I have spoken.
Thank you, Frankie.
Here's the thing, Frankie. What if you're wrong? What if he gets elected? Then what? Then what?
Will you move to Juarez?
No, no, of course not. I'm still here, but that's never going to happen. But I'm going to say, there is no way that he can do it. You cannot win the presidency with offending, 100% of the Hispanics, the Asians. I mean, everybody else that he offends. There's no way in the world.
He hasn't gotten to the Asians yet.
What?
Give him time.
He's not worked his ways.
I think you're right, Frankie. I really do. But hoping for him to be nominated puts him one step closer. And boy, that seems risky to me.
Happy New Year, Frankie. All right, folks, we'll take one last break here and then come back. And I'm going to have a lightning round for Mike and pick the pearls of his wisdom and Walt. And we'll be right back to do a lightning round on predictions. Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Well, Kelly, Dan, great show. I'm listening, but I got a traffic update just quickly. Roadrunner Parkway in front of Desert Hills is really icy. I saw at least two accidents. Police are on the scene, but tell your viewers to be really careful on the road.
Okay, thanks for the call. Thanks, Dan. Have a good day.
And I am listening. I'm listening.
Thanks, man. Hands on the wheel. Yeah, have a good day. Happy New Year.
Don't get behind.
It's Kelly here with just a few more minutes, and I just want to thank Andy, my neighbor, who saw that there was a pipe that was broken and came and shut the water off. Thank you, Andy. Okay, so we're lightning around. This is for Walt. The county, the fight between the Sheriff Kiki and Billy Garrett, who comes out on top?
Billy Garrett. I think Kiki needs to get his resources. He will get money, according to Ben Rossity. They did get $2.7 million this year, so not the four they was promised. But Kiki is overstepping his boundaries. Billy Garrett is the chairman of the commission.
No, he's going to come out on top. Mike,
yes.
Susanna, as the up-and-coming female Hispanic national politician, where does she end up?
I don't believe that she's going to get any of the traction that she started to get in 2012. Because of this most recent incident, which in and of itself, I think is fairly minor and so on, but it did get national news. I mean, when your picture is on top of a story going back and the headline is the history of drunken politicians, yeah, and they go all the way back to, John Adams or something. It wasn't John Adams.
Grant, famously.
Grant, certainly. Yeah. Warren G. Harding during Prohibition was famous for his booze parties. And But when her picture is there,
you're thinking of Sam Adams. All right. Walt's the county tax issue and tax protesters and the fight over who's going to win that.
Well, county seats come up for election in 2016 as well. That will certainly be an issue. We'll see. I mean, in the city, I thought that would be a bigger issue than it was. We'll see if the county gets punished for that, if the county commissioners who voted for that get punished for it.
Mike, President 2017.
I believe that Hillary Clinton will probably be elected, yes.
Yeah. Hillary, Walt, we got 10 seconds. USA versus ISIS.
USA.
Yes, USA.
Thanks, guys, thanks for coming on the show, special show today. Really appreciated it. And folks, be careful. There is ice out in front of Roadrunner at Desert Hills, so be very careful. Black ice. Have a great day, and this will be repeated on New Year's Day. Have a great one.
Happy New Year,
everybody.
Happy New Year.
Take care. We'll see you back in 22 hours. Ciao.